This meeting is now being recorded.
Let me see if I can find her.
Her phone is here, so.
Okay. While we're waiting for her, there are a few things that we do know. I'm just summarizing. We don't have time to go through any of the use cases, so I just want to summarize. So, Yvette, if you could bring up on the screen the use cases, that sheet, that's going to be an important sheet for us. We're going to use that as our template moving forward. We have five use cases. Is there anything that has to be done about any of these use cases, defining it further, getting the words right, et cetera? I ask this because I'm going to be speaking to the contracted party's house on Thursday, and my intention is to walk through, maybe not walk through, but share with them the process and share with them that we've arrived at five use cases. Here are what those five use cases are. So it would basically be verbatim reading out what's here. So if you could take a minute and just look through each of the five and make sure that we're okay with them.
Hey, we did say that there were some nuances about number five that
right.
distinguished it from use case.
Right.
I haven't indicated a five as a must-have or we know.
Okay.
I don't think it's a critical thing because those requests can be satisfied by other means.
Are they? Yeah, for all image. Yes, I agree.
This is when it's case five.
To me, it seems like it's low hanging fruit given that all the other stuff they're doing. So throwing this that in is not overly burdensome, but it's not critical, I don't think.
Is there a comment in it that says this is not critical? Here's why. Because it will not be handled by this system. You know, I just think there could be questions about that.
Wait, I'm sorry, did you repeat that?
Yeah.
On number five, it says data subject requests their own data via the system. This system, it is critical, but not going to be answered by this system.
It would be handled manually. As in, it could be handled manually.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, actually, you know, that does, okay, let's just take that to its logical extreme. That could beg the question suggesting that every single query can be handled manually, right? So I'm going to suggest that if we say that, we might want to add a little bit of information about why we think it makes more sense for these to be handled manually, as in expected low volume,
right?
Difficulty in assigning credentials to individuals or what?
Sure.
Yeah. I'd be all right with that.
Okay.
So if you take this to the contracting party's house, in case one is going to cause, I suspect, some controversy, because as Scott's informed us, reverse search isn't currently possible within the implementation of RDAP.
Case one is not about.
Hmm?
Case one.
Yeah, but it says reverse search, and whether it, because it says it there, it's going to be, people are going to be upset about this. So I would suggest that we perhaps think about phrasing that in a way that's going to meet, that where this is our sort of general case.
I'm not so sure. I agree with what you're saying, Benedict, about how we express it, right?
Mm.
Well, words certainly have meaning here. And the reason I mention this is because, so I can imagine that there are certainly contracted parties who would say they like the idea of ICANN being the, you know, portal for non-public data, you know, eliminating the responsibility or the requirement for registries and registrars to provide that particular interface. And so maybe that's the way to lead the introduction of this particular topic, you know, as opposed to, you know, there are going to be authorized users who are going to have special needs.
So if this is our default case, we should, it should be something like authorized. I mean, I'm starting with the authorized users again. I also suspect that if we start with, you know, if this is an alleviation of your pain, that also might, that might be suspicious. I don't know. Maybe I've spent too much time in policy land. What you've told me is that single queries are essentially what we're talking about. So should we leave? Why don't we leave with that? Single queries of domain names through a system managed by ICANN, or a centrally managed system. And then advanced, then the second sentence would be about, you know, more advanced requirements like multiple queries under the same token.
Not sure, but I mean, the way I look at this, and you know, of course, I'm not necessarily typical of the contracted parties, but I understand what their concerns are. A lot of these folks are concerned about being given an implementation requirement, right? And they're concerned about what kinds of, how do we comply with, you know, the data privacy requirements. So I think if we approach the introduction of POPI from the perspective of trying to alleviate the concerns, so if they're concerned about being given an implementation requirement, we might want to start with something that describes the model, for example. So here's what we've been talking about. Here's the kind of operational model we've been talking about, right? And so, you know, we would note that ICANN has an operational role. This is what the registry and registrar operational role would be. Anyway, setting the stage a little bit before we kind of jump into the use cases might be helpful, you know, in terms of providing some context.
Okay. So we propose a model in which, and I think it's restating what we said, ICANN is responsible for authorization, access, right? And in which, you know, in which the following use cases would see. Does that sound like a good preamble? And then authorized users, I think maybe leave the examples, require access to domain records, which I would say which under RDAP is supported on a single domain basis.
Yeah.
That's true, right?
How are we doing this reverse searching stuff?
Well, we can't, it turns out.
Yeah.
It's not available.
It's not directly in RDAP. No.
Right.
So why is it up there?
Because your users, the users have got very used to a reverse search capability, but through offline indexing, we'll be expecting something like that.
So here's the thing.
Mm.
The users may want that type of thing, but that means it's functionality that the contracted parties have to implement.
Or not. And I say or not, because I mean the example that Benedict provided yesterday was one of people using domain tools, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a potential business model here. You know, someone may want to somehow step into this fray, assuming that they could replicate that kind of functionality. I mean, I'm not saying I know that it's possible or not, but it may not necessarily be a contracted party requirement to provide that kind of service.
What you're talking about requires a lawyer and legal.
And other things, yeah.
Among other things, yes. But that's going to be the biggest part of it.
Mm.
This data is not supposed to live, you know, forever. You know, once you get it, you have it, that's it. It should be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Or else somebody's going to get liability on them.
Yeah.
So I understand that domain tools did this all, but this is a new world.
Right.
I'm not a lawyer.
Right. But keep in mind, there's nothing precluding someone like that from doing this with the public data.
But I don't think we're talking about the public
data. Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Not explicitly, but when you start talking about things like correlation, so for example, registration dates, could fall in.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. God. That's not even what this group is talking about. I mean, it's not the public data that anyone cares about.
This is setting expectations, and the way that seems to set the expectations is what we're going to end up doing is carry a specification where they can do reverse main searches, and I'm just like, okay, that's interesting.
Well, are we going to say that that's out of scope then? That would certainly alleviate that concern.
So if I was a registrar or a registry, I would look at that and say, oh, you're forcing me to do something I don't do today. That, so, yeah, I would say they would be concerned.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They will be.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So one thing I talked about yesterday was this idea that we've introduced in EP about a unique ID that isn't in itself private information. So if we're thinking about a mismatch here between expectation of users and deliverability.
Can I just interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
An IP isn't PII data either, but it is considered PII data, right?
It depends.
So with this unique identifier, right?
It depends on the access to the sort of the database that links it to a real identity. So if it's just a correlator, that links domains together, then it's unlikely to be usable as an identifier for humans. It's about how you get back to the human. But we can talk about the ruling about the IP address, but it was a court in Germany that made that ruling. It relies on having another set of information that links the IP address back to an individual. So it depends on how you guys view, or how we all as a group view use cases.
Well, I mean, I think our technical remit spelled out in the charter limits us to capabilities that are either in the RFCs or, what was the other word? In
natural fit.
Or extensions or something like that, right?
I don't remember.
There is an internet thread that Mario Lofredo wrote that describes this, but it's not in the RFCs. So maybe that's the way that we, you know, describe this. A little bit out of scope for this group's remit, perhaps to be solved in the future.
I'm fine with. I think that's a good answer. Like the reverse search is not well trod territory, and it might be better for us to say, in the future, this could be considered. But I would worry that certain, you know, some registrars and registries may think that the bar is pretty high, and you're just adding on complexity.
Yeah.
So what do we want to do with the word?
The originator, as you may remember, when you were talking about there was something in about just the text bulk access, and we talked about, I introduced the idea that Tim had talked about what do we mean by bulk access, and those three possibilities, one of which seems fairly uncontentious, the idea that you can, under a given authorization, you can do one search after the other. Seems like you're probably, that's at least technically implementable. The second also seems potentially reasonable, that rate limiting might be removed or lifted under certain circumstances, right? So it's really that it's what we're, and it, so it strikes me that maybe we should include those two and kick the idea of an advanced, a sort of reverse search, either into a separate use case or into an alternative set, because that, you know, into a node here, because it is because of the loss of access, this is going to be an issue for a large number of users of this system.
Well, so here's something else that may or may not be relevant. In the context of keeping in touch with what's going on within the RDAP pilot group, right? Now, Francisco, remember that conversation we had about search support? And I think where we were last week, you know, being able to do a search by full name, which is specified in 7482. So if you're part of the RFC, then you know some might describe that as a reverse search capability.
Mm-hmm.
I think we left that as a may. So a registry operator may choose to support that. Is that correct?
My reflection is that it's a must, but I thought it was using the
registrar name
in the handle.
Yeah.
The handle.
But that was a lookup.
Mm.
Correct. Right. So that wasn't the entity search capability. The entity search capability where we said we think that would be a may.
Right. On the search, I think we haven't got to that one, have we?
I thought we covered that last week.
And 323 of section 3.2.3 is RSC 7482.
That's
number 27.
Oh, so 27? Yeah, but I thought we jumped down to that one because it was related to the IP address stuff.
Right. So there are a couple of issues that we raised that were we supposed to be solved using limited search capabilities, but you guys pushed back on that idea.
Yep.
Actually, on the IP address you said yes. On the register name, you came up with the use the name as the handle and make it
yep.
a lookup.
Yep.
But there is the wider issue, which is 27, that we haven't yet covered.
Okay.
Which is the required implementation of searchability in RDAF once the RC provides that functionality. This is coming from the discussion where we maintain that the test spec and required implementation of the search capabilities, but some that should not be the case.
Okay. Well, so maybe the way to deal with this is just you just simply note that, look, this is a topic of ongoing conversation, right? Not something that this group is going to be dealing with, but it will be left to the remit of those groups that are responsible for looking at it.
So I'm actually modified the test.
Oh.
I'm debating.
Why didn't you say something? I would have stopped talking.
I'll throw your mic now.
Yeah.
What we're saying is at this point, also we'll only cover lookup queries.
This doesn't read at all. The IE now makes no sense. That should belong to reverse. The
right.
Second set of brackets.
Yeah.
That does not preclude is pretty.
So now the person
pretty relevant.
So we can just scrub that parenthetical and
yeah.
The IE.
Yeah.
I mean, we could just say reduced or no rate limiting, etc.
No, might include means that you've got an et cetera implied already. I'd say might include single queries, multiple queries reduced on our rate limiting, because we haven't, because if this is the catch-all, then single queries, multiple queries.
So what do we mean by multiple queries?
This is a catch-all, right? So it says, we want to do, we talked about having multiple queries means asking for a single domain multiple times, I think.
Well,
we've come to. Yeah.
So what do we need to
I think we can
specify the
I think we can probably drop it, require access to domain records. Yeah? And then we can then this does not preclude later mechanisms supporting bulk queries and replies, right? Which follows that then follows again, because the bulk queries, the bulk remember replies to the multiple.
So otherwise useful.
Yeah.
Later mechanics supporting bulk query. Should we say?
Yeah, maybe we should.
We have reverse search there too, and then at the moment we will only support the queries or something like that. Be very explicit what this also is going to support.
You don't like the text up there on.
So I think it's getting there. But the proposal is The first sentence should be the most default, the most simple use case, which is authorized users require access to domain records. That's the purpose of the system. Right?
Yes.
But we haven't introduced the idea of any kind of multiple or bulk access at that point. So we're proposing to drop the second phrase of that sentence, which might include. I'm okay with it like that, or I think we could drop entirely the which might include, and then just say that it does not preclude a later mechanism supporting bulk queries and replies. We can either flesh out what we mean by bulk queries there or not, and then reverse search capability the contemplated. And we say we know this is a dragon.
My counsel here is that we don't try to achieve perfection in the language, because like Steve said yesterday, no plan survives first contact.
Mm. And I guarantee you, no matter what we say, it's going to give hope.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, then.
I think we're good enough.
Look, can we just then, maybe this is reasonable, multiple queries, full stop, single queries or multiple queries. Reduced or no rate limiting now makes no context, no sense in that context at all.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Lisa, you're editing?
Yeah.
That's it. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay, we're good at that. What about other use cases?
Right.
So one thing about number two that might attract some attention, I don't know that everyone is going to understand that we're contemplating some type of, you know, asynchronous, offline type of query response mechanism here. We might want to explain that before we, you know, get to this particular use case.
Feels like it's almost becoming a second separate use case, the asynchronous system. Sensitive, you might say something like particular requests that may require manual authorization can be handled out of bound or asynchronously as a after use case, either before or after use case two. So we envisage the bulk of it being handled automatically, but some stuff will have to be handled.
So here is a sense I'm picking up here from just the discussions in the last two things. Maybe what we should be focusing on are what are the preamble messages rather than getting, because we're looking at the use cases and it's prompting us to say, oh, we better put context around this or that, et cetera. So what are the preamble messages that we want to get across? And this will help us as talking points for Kobe and other places as well.
Well, and that's why I was saying it might be very helpful to at least in the very beginning of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Set the stage by describing the kinds of operational models that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, once they understand, you know, where the players fit, you can start to figure out how it might work.
So I think we need to state really clearly what we came to yesterday, which is this system is envisaged to provide access to non-public data for a relatively limited set of users, authenticated users. That's like the start. It's pretty much the title of our group. So, you know, it's not a free for all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of gating thing that we decided would help to rate limit. To manage, you know, the scaling of these initiatives.
I think that there's a risk that while that is what we want to happen, I mean, since the way I've been talked down from my scaling problem is that we have to cater to very simple operators, very exceedingly simple operators. Well, if I'm an exceedingly simple client applying the same logic, then I don't want to go to two places. I'm just going to go to ICANN, even for stuff that I'm not authenticated yet. more, because I'm going to get at least a partial answer back, right? I'm going to get, here's all you can have is the name servers, and here you go.
No, redirect.
But then you can redirect me. That's fine. I still only go to one place. I, as a dumb client, will only ever query ICANN. It may redirect me, but I'm still only going to one place, or I never have to configure it to ever talk to more than one thing, which means now you're taking the entire query volume into it.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are responses. So that doesn't happen.
Then you're not getting there. That's not RDAP anymore.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, RDAP's supposed to redirect. If you know where the query is supposed to go, you're supposed
to. You're not required to redirect. You may redirect.
I think it would be in the best interest of the entire internet region to redirect.
Yes.
And perhaps that can be considered. Like, is there any possibility to this being a beta?
So I understand what Murray's saying. I actually disagree that every client is going to end up doing this. The bootstrapping stuff is well documented in RFCs, and that's what people are supposed to be doing. I think it's going to be, anyone who's writing anything other than a curl command, who has read the RFCs is going to know that you're supposed to follow the normal bootstrap process, or you find the bootstrap curl, right?
I think we're selecting a logic that clients were catering to are
Gavin, what's your client?
Yarn.
My client uses the bootstrap process, and it will follow it, right?
Well, one potential challenge with the bootstrapping process, go look at that registry right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty darn sparse. And, you know, until we get to a situation where, like, every TLD has an entry there, and, you know, everything that needs to be there for the system, well, it's actually there. I mean, I think the risk of what Murray's describing is very real. You know,
so I think, I would hope that at some, maybe not in this group, but some other ICANN process is going to tell the registry to register the TLDs in the ICANN registry.
That's well, and actually, at least the way that works, Andy, it's not the way you just described it.
Fine.
No. So for example, I think this is actually very useful information because it's not what I expected either. There actually is an entry for .com. In there, and it's pointing to, you know, my RDAP pilot service. And so when I went through the process of trying to figure out how to do this, my first thought was, oh, how do you normally register something with IANA? Well, you send a template off to IANA. And I did that, and Michelle Cotton gets back to me and is like, Scott, what are you trying to do? I'm sorry, what? I'm trying to get an entry in this registry here. She says, well, that's not how we're doing it. Anyway, so long story short, it turns out that there is some type of a web interface that the registries use to communicate with ICANN. And there's a whole field of, like, values and parameters. And one of the values within this particular interface is the URL for your service. And, you know, once I figured this out, it was a matter of going to my customer service department, you know, who had the appropriate access credentials for this particular web interface. Hey, could you please add this in there? You know, they did it. And the next thing, you know, a little while later, an entry shows up in the IANA registry.
Do you think there are three ways of doing it? At the moment, Chris is grabbing that thing.
So I think you're talking about the root zone management tool.
Yes.
And I can talk.
IANA tool.
Yeah.
Well, IANA is part of ICANN, right?
This is an IANA registry.
GDD portal as well.
Sorry?
It's done through the GDD portal as well.
No.
Okay. So I went through the kind of capsule IANA registration form that's at the entry.fans. And that got turned into a root zone management change request. That's probably the last view. So maybe I'm the first to change after you kind of kick them.
but you're talking about the mechanics. I'm talking about a policy.
I think the RDAP profile says that the TLD has to be entered into the bootstrap registry. So as soon as the RDAP profile becomes anointed as official ICANN policy and something thou shalt do as a registry operator, then that will initiate a process where all the registries will go above.
Or GTLDs.
Yeah, for GTLDs.
The CCTLDs are out of scope.
Right.
Yeah. But what are clients going to do then?
Right.
They're not going to query a CCTLD that doesn't have a thing in the bootstrap.
No, they're going to go to ICANN.
And ICANN's going to do what?
I don't know.
So ICANN's going to return an error saying, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
Not in the bootstrap right now.
Not in the bootstrap.
It'd be the same. It's going to be the same issue. So, I mean, honestly, what is ICANN supposed to do?
That's what I'm here to figure out.
It has no choice but to issue a 404.
That's right.
For what it's worth, the profile does contain a requirement for GTLDs registries and registrars to register
Registrars can't register. Can't register.
Sorry,
is there an implicit requirement on the output of this working group, technical group, that the RDAP profile is also complete? Whatever, sanctioned, specified, jazz hand. Well, I don't know. The RDAP profile that you guys are working on, are we saying, you know, as part of the basis of what we're trying to do here, we're assuming that that process is going to go forward and
right.
be ratified?
I think that's one of our key assumptions.
Is it? Okay.
Well, there was that.
No, I'm saying it should, if it's not in the document, I'm saying that's what we're assuming here.
Yeah.
We did have that one, I don't know, somewhere it said kind of keep tabs on what's going on with the RDAP
program. The RDAP program.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I know I'm mangling that phrasing, but
half of them are here.
It just was not, I don't know if it was, I don't remember being clearly spelled out, but.
And we ought to. In the assumptions piece, anyway.
I'm loading it back in.
That's inherent with community efforts to develop another profile versus the force. So it's only referring us. It's only recognizing, I guess, it's happening. It doesn't put it as a profile.
So should we add assumption 9?
I think so, yes. We should assume that the, I don't know what that process is called, but. Complete and is ratified.
Or however that works.
Well, we're looking for completeness, and that was a open net, so we got that. Okay, I added some words in the charter document on the assumptions. Thanks, Andy, for that. So here is what I've written down. Okay, as preamble, the system is envisaged to provide access to non-public data and to a relatively limited set of authenticated users. We hope that this will impose a gating factor on the scaling of the system or request. We envision two kinds of operational models, synchronous, asynchronous, with some description of those two models. So that's the preamble. After that, in our discussions, we worked through multiple use cases, and we're now down to 5 use cases. Here is use case 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We deem 4 of them as critical, the 5th one as useful but not necessary to be, solved here in this group. That basically covers all of that piece. Then we get to the user journey component. We looked at three different important aspects of the user journey. A, the user should be able to discover the base URL for the centralized access and authentication system. In there, we had some notes, right, Elisa, about discovery?
Sorry, one thing.
I think that's where we had the conversation about the two profiles, new link relation type, as well as new remark type, right? That's what we discussed. So we memorialized that. So that takes care of user journey, the first one. The second is correlate based on different aspects without seeking access to the underlying data.
Mm-hmm.
And third is authorization is centralized in ICANN. Access of GDPR protected data is centralized within ICANN. So those are 3 key parts of the user journey. Number one was that the user should be able to discover the base URL for centralized access and authorization. And there we're contemplating doing 2 things with the 2 types, the new link relation type as well as a new remark type.
Maybe we should start with the one we've all talked about, which is the redirect for unauthenticated users. That might be the first thing. So unauthenticated users should be redirected. Appropriately. Should we go straight to yours?
What would you like to? Go ahead, Andy.
I
you're on high. Recognize you're on. We're just going to finish this one topic and then come back to you.
I was just going to say we might want to make a distinction between users who have no authentication versus who are wrongly authenticated. Wrongly authenticated, you get an error.
Yeah.
One.
But you brought up an interesting point, right?
Because if we're going to say that there's a relatively small number of users who will be appropriately authorized, well, what does that mean for the rest of them? So, indeed, you know, part of the user journey may be explaining, you know, and
you know, for those users who
are not authorized, you have to see the not public data. This is how this works.
This is how it works.
A lightweight mechanism to redirect them appropriately.
Right.
Yeah.
Scaling.
You're on high. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Same to you. You're working hard. Someone is killing a keyboard over there.
Yeah, that was me pounding away. We got a whole team, minus Crocker and John Crane at the table here. John Crane is on the phone, and we've made pretty good progress overall. There are a couple of things that, you know, we started with. We had the charter that we published a couple of weeks ago. We've gone in. We've looked at the questions that are listed in the charter. We've eliminated or we've disposed of some of them. We've taken some of those and increased the priority of those questions for this group to work on. We've looked at the assumptions. So all of the pieces, the core subject matter pieces of the charter document, we've reviewed all of those. The most substantive amount of work that this group has done in the last couple of days, Yoram, has been to look through the use cases. We defined use cases in a call last week, and we spent the last 2 days walking through the use cases. We had 8, then we went to 2, then we went to 7, we're now at 5. But this has been a good process. That's the way it should work. And we're now, with the benefit of 2 days of work on it, we're fairly confident that we have 5 real use cases that, that we need to solve for. Of the 5, we have 4 that, we believe are must have cases that the TSG must look at and must, arrive at some design parameters and some solutions. And the 5th is a useful thing, but not necessary for the TSG itself to go and look at. But we've also mapped out some of the narrative around the work that we're doing. Probably one of the seminal things that we've done is yesterday, fairly early on, we started to think about how to actually operate a service like this. How would ICANN operate a service like this? And fairly quickly came to a dual operational model, one that would be completely synchronous in nature and another that would be kind of offline, asynchronous in nature. We've spent quite a bit of time digging into what that means and how to enable it, what kind of performance parameters might be there, what kind of SLAs, what kind of scalability, resiliency needs might attach to such a service. So there's been good work and I would characterize it as really good initial outlines and definitions of what needs to be done there. We've also got some thinking into what the user journey is, and what we mean by that is who are the users and what kind of experience should the user have when they encounter the system? And so we are defining some of the parameters around that and defining some of what the experience of the user should be as they go through this this authorization access authentication, et cetera, model. We've also got other notes. These are areas that in our discussion we recognize are important items that have to be looked at, but where we believe that this group is not the right group to look at it, but we believe it's our responsibility to make a note of them and to make sure that the appropriate other parties, whether it's a policymaking group or other groups, pay sufficient attention to those areas. An example, for instance, is enumerating all the error conditions that may happen. This group does not believe it is the group to decide what to do should such errors happen, but it believes that it should enumerate the errors and then hand it off to policy groups to decide, in case of error one, here is what action should be taken, etc. So that becomes basically future work for other groups outside of the TSG. So that gives you at a high level kind of a summary of what we've got. We've decided also that this face-to-face format has been extremely effective. So we've decided that we're going to meet again in February here in Washington, D.C. And this time in February, we're going to meet for 3 days so that we can hopefully on the third day come up with a draft initial report, if you will, that can be looked at and then published ahead of Kobe. We've also agreed that the team will travel to Kobe for two reasons. One, to present the model that we've thought of, et cetera, to the community. There's a session that has been requested for on the Monday of the Kobe meeting in the large room. And then the team will listen to and engage with other parts of the community, for example, the contracted party house or the intellectual property stakeholder group, et cetera. And then the team, the technical study group, will meet face-to-face in a workshop type of a session, approximately 4 hours, towards the end of the ICANN meeting to reflect upon the feedback that has been received from the community and to think about whether the draft design document, if you will, that the group has brought about, or what changes need to be made to that. So that's what we're looking at. And then after that, there'll probably be a rapid set of iterations from within the group, a couple of phone calls, and at this point the plan is to deliver what we would call a draft final specification or a document back to you and to the community. We're targeting April 23rd to have that done and then, you know, to have that be delivered. So that's kind of the plan. And then at some time after that, we will get to item number 14 of our charter. And when we get to that item, we will actually consider our work done. There are a few questions for you, but before we get to the questions, let me take a break and a pause and ask if you have any comments or questions. Group.
Just one thing, I don't know.
Well, first of all, I'm
sorry, Joran, I don't know if
you
mentioned that. The call is being recorded and we intend to publish this.
Right. This call is recorded, Joran, and all of this will be published to the public, so including our interaction with you. So just to let you know.
No problem at all. Well, first of all, I want to my gratitude for you doing this important work. And in a way, I have to admit I'm a little bit envious of you as well, because I would love to have been in the room having those technical discussions as you're having them. But I know that my competence is too limited in technical things to be there. So remember that I'm a PowerPoint engineer. I'm not a real engineer. With that, I hope that nothing I say is now going to break the important work you're doing and the sort of how you're doing things, but I just want to take a step back. The reason why we're doing this, and I will probably say things that you already know, but let me sound intelligent by saying things that you already know. And the reason why we're doing this is because the current interpretation of GDPR doesn't make it possible to have a unified access model. And the reason for that is the saying is that data controllers, which are, and this is not only me who says that, this is what the DPA also says, the data protection authorities, is that the contracted parties has a legal risk because they have the data and they collect the data. And I'm publicly saying that the law is not made for anything like ICANN or who is. It's made for going up to task force on top of internet like Facebook, Google, and other ones. So this is sort of a side effect of the law. So, which means that if we want to have, and a unified access model is sort of a word, a unified way for people to access a system, we have to figure out a way of lowering the contracted party's risk. And if we can't achieve that, it's what sort of says in the temp spec that every time the contracted parties request a request, they have to, according to the law, make a decision if that they think it's according to the law or not. A side effect that many people forget is that if you actually get that data from contracted parties, you become legally responsible according to GDPR as well. As soon your fingers touch it, you actually are now under GDPR. For instance, if you're a research institution or anything else. And even more funny, if the contracting body gives out that data to someone who then mistreats the data, you become legally responsible for that as well. That's why GDPR is not only a legislation, it's a virus. For good and bad reasons, this is not a bug. It's the feature of the actual legislation. After engagement with the contracting parties, I think we all agreed upon that we need to figure out another way of doing this. And one of the avenues that we're now starting talking about is to do what we call then the technical solution to try to diminish the contracted parties' legal responsibility. One of the fun things with this law, if there's anything to be said fun, is not like a water balloon. You know, you squeeze something and something else happens. So the fact that we are talking about lowering the contracted parties' risk doesn't, you don't have to bring into the assumption that that risk will then appear somewhere else. And that is a good thing to sort of have in the back of your mind, is that it's not like it's symmetric. Oh, someone loses risk, someone gains that risk. Because that's not how the law works. Because the law is sort of, in a way, describing what you do and your actions. And if you do it right, you don't get responsible for other people's actions for other purposes. I give you an example. When we talk about who is data, everybody knows that the contracting party collects this data for other purposes. For instance, they'd like to have the name so they can actually send an invoice and contact information. If you look at it, the name is the name. It's the same information as in who is, and they often have a contact, technical contact as well. So they collect this data for other purposes. What the contracting party does with that particular data, that use of data, is out of scope for this discussion. They will always be under GDPR for decisions they make about how they, if they share that data, send that data, but that's got nothing to do with who is. So, instance, if they share for other reasons this data, you know, in the value chain between the wholesale and retail, that is actually outside of who is as well. The reason I'm saying is it's because it sort of creates this maze of different sort of different alternatives. But let's go back to the sort of technical solution. One of the things that is sort of built into this idea is that by making sure that ICANN is the only one who can ask a question to the contracted parties, and the contracted parties move this back to and uses ICANN.org to send it back, you limit there's a theory is that you can actually diminish the contracted parties' risks doing that. We didn't come out of that out of blue. We have had spoken to many legal advisors, including the European Commission, who thinks that this is a potential avenue for doing that. But, of course, the question comes up, you have to describe it in more technical details, and that's where you come in. The other side of this is, of course, that who have the right to ask the question? And that's a very fundamental question to be asked. So in our theory, on based on this, and I'm going to use Interpol as an example of this, because Europol, and the reason why I'm using Europol is because they happen to have a law that says that they can do certain things, and it makes my life much easier. So they've been working for quite a while on a solution where Europol acts as the one who authorizes the ones who's going to get into the system. Because someone has to authorize the right for someone to come into the system according to that's what the law says. So in my mind right now, I accept the fact that someone has now already authorized it through an accreditation system. So the only thing I see in the system is this sort of request coming through. I'm just going to pick on something, the user interface, which is important. Some of the things we are not going into this totally blind, because the DPS has provided us with fairly good guidance about some of the parameters around this. One of the questions is, of course, can you do multiple searches or bulk access or something? We've asked that question 3 times to the DPAs, and so far they said no. Probably going to ask a 4th time as well, just because I want to carry it out. But we don't do this, so we don't go in this blindsided. So that is the background. We are trying to figure out a way to lower the contracted party's risk to be able to potentially do a unified access model. How does this combine into the PDP? The PDP today, sometimes I feel like I have, it's hard sometimes to tell how things are. But today, actually, ICANN as an institution cannot do policies for a unified access model because the law says that the contracted parties are legally responsible for it. And we can never have a policy that sort of overshadows what the law says. I mean, take an example of how this works in practice. Wright has a Whois database. They have that database. They can make that decision because they actually take that legal responsibility on themselves. We don't have a database, and therefore we cannot take that. We cannot take that decision. So the reason why we're doing this now, and that's why, and I'm so grateful you're doing it, the end point is actually not me or the rest of the community. The end point is that I'm going to take this paper and I'm going to go to the data protection authorities in Europe. And I'm going to say one simple question. We now constructed a technical solution. Do you agree with me that this will lower the contracted party's risk when it comes to processing of data according to GDPR? And then what happens, and this goes back to the policy work, is that then the community can decide, should we have a unified access model? How should that unified access model, now in policy terms, work? And then we actually have the ability for the ICANN as the institution to make that policy about a unified access model. Was that clear enough? Or have I missed anything out? Have I upset anything or changed any perspectives?
I'm seeing a couple of nodding heads in the room. Yoran, folks have any questions for Yoran on this? Okay. Thanks, Yoran. So let's go to 4 questions that have come up that are really aimed at you. You may or may not have answers for them now, but just want to surface them. It'll come as more structured way when we write it down and send it across to you, Yoran. But there are 4 things. Number 4 questions. The first is ICANN intending to be the proxy for all non-public data queries. And the subtext of this is that there's recognition that saying yes to this might have legal and political implications. And there is a sub-question on this, which is, or does ICANN also consider a distributed model for access to non-public data?
That's a very good question, and thank you for asking it. I have repeated this many times, and people get surprised. I actually, from a moral standpoint, the institution, and I'm, I make a difference between ICANN institution, ICANN organ, board, as you know. I can, as an institution, have in its bylaws that who is data should be there. So that means that it's sort of strange that we would refrain from taking legal responsibility for something that is in our bylaws and sort of push it out to the contracted parties. Because we should take that responsibility, and we should take that responsibility seriously, and therefore we've said we should be in the game of taking legal responsibility of when it comes to the WHOIS data. So the answer, the word proxy means different things in different legislation, so I'm going to leave that out. But to give you an example, just to show it is, if we are legally responsible, we are responsible for our own actions on this. But if let's say Google has a much bigger financial risk when it comes to WHOIS than we do. The fines are the big important things here. By saying that we have a responsibilities, we are not going to be liable for anything that Google does. It's only going to be confined to anything that's set by the policies. So that's what I'm saying, that the law is not symmetric in that sense. Taking on risk doesn't mean that you get the same risk exposure as someone else. So I would say that yes, the whole intent is to make sure that we diminish the contracted party's responsibilities, and ICANN as the institution, through its multi-stakeholder policy works, takes the responsibility that we have decided upon.
Okay, thank you.
Is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, I'm just asking, I'm polling the group on whether they have clarifications or questions on this.
Yeah.
Andy?
Yeah. So does being the proxy, is that a specific mechanism?
I'm not sure that I want to use the word proxy right now, but I understand what you say. But
you mean
proxy can actually have a legal meaning.
Party.
Yes.
So, okay. So I think the basis of my question is it viewed that you are alleviating or liability from the contracted parties if all queries flow through ICANN servers?
For non-public data.
That is the theory. That's the theory and an assumption we're working on right now, based on legal advice and input from the European Commission. But in the end, we don't know until the DPA says that. Is that fair?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But can I, again, just being stupidly stubborn and Swedish, never think about this that you move risk. You diminish risk, but it doesn't mean it's increasing somewhere else.
Right. Benedict, a follow-up?
Yeah.
One of the benefits. Hey, Aaron. It's Benedict here. One of the benefits that that a central or a model like that brings is ability to log for ICANN to log and see requests. Would there be appetite for publishing a transparency report based on those logs?
That's an interesting question because the law says that you have to log. If you don't believe it, ICANN is all about transparency. But there's also limitations. This is one of the really fun things that I asked the one who actually wrote the law, that it could be harder to do transparency reports because the law could prohibit you to share some of that information. But on a general level, I haven't thought about it, but I don't see any problem with it. Because this has to be transparent and ICANN is transparent.
Thank you.
But then again, I would say that answer would really become as a part of an eventual policy. I think that is,
right.
If the community then agrees that they should be doing this, that should probably be in the policy.
Great. Thank you. Any other follow-ups to your on this first question? Okay. The second question. ICANN, the sole party authorizing access to non-public data? Again,
good question. Let's sort of take a step back. First we have an organization outside ICANN who does the accreditation of an organization. And I know that from legal perspective, I should use some different words, but you get it. Someone who says that this organization and this individual at that organization has the right to ask the question. That is actually one of the biggest problems, because in the U.S., I understand there are 40,000 independent police forces or something. How do you know that a police officer somewhere actually have the right to ask that question? Because it has to be by a law. So we are thinking that someone else is doing that. And for intellectual property, we, for instance, it's suggested that WIPO should do that. Then comes the question, who actually authorized? Then comes the actual question. And here I'm not 100% certain how this will work, but there are two different alternatives. One of them is that WIPO, as an organization, vet that question. It's not a feature, it's not a bug in the law, but it's a feature in the law that every request has to have a reason for it, which is sort of funny with the amount of questions that goes to any given WHOIS system every day. But so there has to be somewhere of working that out. And I'm totally open for proposals that, because the magnitude of volumes that has to be dealt with when it comes to this is what creates the problem. Because the law enforcement, not even them could say that they have one legal purpose for accessing the data. They can have different laws for wanting access to the data. So right now, if that becomes too problematic, I sort of leave it aside for a second. But if you have a solution to work that out, I'm so happy to look into it.
Follow up on this, Francisco.
Yes, John, just wanted to get clarification on this. So you, are you saying that ICANN doesn't have to be the only party that says whether a query is approved or not? I'm not talking about the people that, whether someone is the IBA agent or something like that, but rather if they are requesting to get access to a specific domain name, so you are open to having someone else, not just ICANN, be in the party that says, yes, you get access, or no, you don't get access.
I can be open for that as well. But as long as we are the only one who asks the question to the contracted party, right, no one should be able to go around us, because that's the trick, I think. But
right,
we are.
This question is more about who will authorize, and the question is it only ICANN who authorizes, or is there a potential that it could be more than ICANN who authorizes?
What's defining authorization?
It could be so. I mean, we are now dealing with something that the law doesn't describe in detail, to be honest. We are going to have a responsibility for the request as well, because we're actually sending it. But on the other hand, I think police forces, for instance, should be better to actually recognize that their question is according to the law. But how exactly that's going to work from a legal perspective, no one knows today. So that's why I'm sort of open for suggestions in that one.
Understand. I have Scott in the queue and then Benedict.
As long as
good.
As long as no one tells me they know exactly how the law works.
Oh, that never happens in our community. Benedict.
Oh yeah, thank you. Which community are you in?
The same one as you.
Okay.
Sorry, that was a question. There was a question there.
Rhetorical. I think we've come to the conclusion, I think, in our charter that access, which is who asks the question, should remain an ICANN function, and that has various technical benefits. The question about authorization, which is leads to a question that's been in the back of my head about bulk access. And by authorization, just to be really clear, what we mean is given a requestor and the what they want, can we say yes or no to a particular request? Right? Now, we've envisaged, and there's no preference at the moment being set here, we've envisaged two systems. One system, which feels like a kind of web browser, where somebody logs in, they say what domain name they want access to, and they write a justification,
and then they get a token to get them access to that small amount of information for a limited period of time. That seems to be from what you're telling us about what the DPAs say, that seems to be narrow, well-defined, and likely to receive approval. The second system is a more automated system where, for example, a law enforcement agency will seek a blanket approval based on a particular purpose, but not critically specifying in ahead of time what data they're seeking. So they would say, hi, we are the National Cybercrime Unit, and we seek bulk blanket access to domain name information in order to combat cybercrime. And then they get a token that's valid for, let's say, 6 months or a year.
I don't mind presenting two different alternatives. You know, remember, if they would know, they would tell us. They have police forces raining down their neck all the time right now. They would love to have a solution, I think, at least some of them. So I don't mind, you know, coming with both of them. I know what they've said. If there are two, you don't have to come up with the ultimate technical solution to one interpretation of the law. If you have two alternatives, bring us both and I will bring it to them. So, but the bulk access, my understanding of that is it's a hard one. Under the current,
Please go on.
I think that everybody understands that there's been a lot of misunderstandings about the technical building of WHOIS. I think, and I'm not shy about saying this, I think that some DPAs actually thought we had a database. And some of the assumptions and the earlier advice we received from the DPAs is they think that ICANN as a database for commercial usage, and that ICANN as an institution are the ones who benefit from that information. All of those things, as you know, are untrue. So, and my way of continuing this dialogue is to always sort of enhance their knowledge about reality and bring in new substance into it. And so far, we've been fairly successful at doing that. With that said, is that with added information and other technical solutions, they might change their mind. We don't know that. Or upgrade their opinion. Believe me, I've been a regulator. We never change our minds.
So we think we are probably going, and I hope I speak for the room, we are probably going to propose two solutions. And so these, to be clear.
Good. I like that.
They're not mutually exclusive. Cool. Thank you very much for your time.
We have one.
Oh, you have
question.
One more question. Can the contracted party has visibility? That's the one.
Yes.
That's really the transparency report. Well, it's a very good question, and I can understand where it's coming from, but. As long as it doesn't increase the risk. Because if a contracting party, let's, theoretically say that I have now established a potential where I take ICANN.org, because we have to go from the institution to the incorporated California nonprofit. So, and I'm the CEO of that. And I'm the only one who takes legal risk in this one.
Yep.
Shit, I am. So if I now made a decision to take this risk and I sent this request goes out to a contracted party who now actually tests something else, that means that the contracted parties will set themselves up to having a responsibility and can't blame me for taking that decision. You see? So yes, transparency, but as long as we don't set the contracted parties up to do a catch-22 where we end up not taking down the risks. And I want to emphasize something. The only way I can have the contracted parties accepting this, and I'm really respectful for that, is we have guidance from the DPA saying that this works, yes. that, you know, so that is the whole game. I mean, the whole game for me is to go back to the DPAs and convince them and get it in such a way that all the contracting parties feels, you know, I'm fine with this. I now understand I had lower risk. So I think there's going to be some, you know, discussions about that going forward as well. That's a good, you have very good questions.
Thank you. Yeah, this group has been working for its free meals.
Yeah, and I make you a promise that when you're done all of this, whenever it is, I'm going to invite you to having a really good dinner together, potentially even including cinnamon buns from Sweden.
That's a promise we'll hold you to. The group here, do you have any other questions, anything else?
A quick readout of what happened.
Go ahead, Joran.
You put a question on the Skype chat. Oh, sorry, on the chat.
I did.
We didn't meet the DPAs last week when I was in Brussels. It was a lot of internal meetings. We also met our I kind of just retained a new lawyer, which we have now been able to convince. She's actually in Canada right now, which is one of the world's leading experts on GDPR, coming from a company called Bird and Bird. Now I don't have her name, so I met her as well. And we had follow-up meetings with the European Commission about new pieces of legislation that comes out that actually names the domain name system. There is a new cybersecurity legislation that's going to be adopted before the parliament election, it's going to happen probably during the first quarter, where the domain name system is particularly named as something that is important for the security and stability of the internet. For once, it was not DPAs. I'm sort of in a waiting mode, both from you guys, but also from the policy work that has been done before I sort of take the next steps. I know there are people who want me to move much faster, but I sort of, for me, the policy work and the expedited policy, that's what I'm eagerly expecting to tell me what to do next, and together with you guys.
It's Ruth Boardman in Toronto, and as the one member of both teams, I'm looking forward to meeting her tonight or tomorrow. Benedict here.
Yeah, I mean she's I have to say she's awesome. use her wisely and ask her good questions.
Thanks.
Good, my friends. Anything else?
No, I think. What about the room? Anything else, folks? Okay. Thanks, Joran. It's been good. Your staff have been excellent. We've just had excellent support overall. It's gone really smooth. The office was officially closed here yesterday because of the snow. The snow accumulation. The staff was very good. Thank you very much for providing that support. We would not be doing the work that we're doing without just all those pieces being smoothed out. So thanks.
Can I just add for the record, I'm very sorry that Steve is not in the room right now because I would have loved to tell him what to do.
I'll put that in notes tomorrow.
We'll have that in Kobe. All right. Thanks, folks.
Have fun, my friends.
Thanks, Joran.
Thank you. Bye.
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 All right, folks. I think that actually brings us to a wrap. We have a couple of good days of meetings. What I'd like to do is, before we actually finish everything up, I'd like to go around the room and ask you for your feedback on both, not just the last 2 days, but, you know, what we've been doing so far and our plan going forward. And specifically about the last 2 days, any feedback on what you'd like to see, what you liked, what you didn't like, what you'd like to see more of, and that's all. So I'll start with you, Tomoko. You're sitting right across from me, so you just...
Well, I was really excited to our team and having very lively discussions on real-world problems, and I had a great time.
Thanks.
Looking forward to actually getting into the designing, making things work.
Great. Benedict?
Just like honored to be amongst such a group of like RFCs I've read for the last decade. And, yeah, it's amazing being here, and I'm thanks for dealing with this pain in the arse, Brett, basically.
Thank you.
Well, I am so thankful for the opportunity to be here and to participate in this great group. I think it's something that's going well, and I like the way it's going as well.
Thanks. John?
Is he on there?
Yeah, I was just you. That's all. Yeah, it's been good meetings. Things are starting to sort of congeal in my mind about how some of this might actually work. Great. Looking forward to continue doing this. I think the in-person meetings is the way to do this.
Yeah, this is I think the right group for this job. Brought a lot of perspectives in that I'm still learning from. Looking forward to driving it to conclusion.
Thanks, Andy.
I think this meeting has been awesome. Spent a lot of things. Topics were brought up. Discussed a lot. I do have to remind myself, looking at Murray and Scott, not to argue in the IETF way. But
he should pick you up.
Sorry.
Other than that, no, I think it's been great. I do wonder. I'm curious about the process going forward and how we're going to get to the specification and the actual style. For other than that, I think it's good.
Okay. How do you think we should do it?
I mean, again, I'm used to the IETF way where someone writes a draft and then everyone gets to see it.
We'll do that eventually.
It seems that there might be two possible approaches. Either with someone who does a straw man exercise and producing a first version, or maybe we break up into smaller groups and they have some design teams that look at particular problems and try and bring them all together. That's just my thought.
Those can work. This group is pretty small, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I'm trying hard to do is not have bring my preconceived notions of how things should work into the room. And again, it's very difficult with these two. I was just curious as to how the when it actually comes to writing the document. How it's going to occur.
So. Yeah, I hadn't decided on this is what it should be, and I don't think it's just my decision. We're going to do this collaboratively at. I'm open to one more versus the other.
Yeah. I would put it on my finger.
Thanks.
I would say in my 14 years of working involved in ICANN, this has probably been the most productive time I've spent involved in. Yeah. Well done, everyone. It's been great. ICANN staff has been fantastic. Thank you very much. Looking forward to getting into the meat of the problem.
Scott?
So I have to admit, I was a little bit concerned about the way we were doing things prior to like last week's phone call. The first couple of calls we had, I don't know, it seemed like there were more questions than answers. And there's not a lot of activity on our mailing list in terms of doing work, getting work done. And again, much like what Andy's saying, this is, in the IETF, the mailing lists are where things happen. And we tend to use the meetings more or less to just ratify decisions on mailing lists. Anyway, having said that, after last week's call and these 2 days, I am very optimistic that this is a task we can accomplish. However,
we're not going to meet again until February, right? So to Andy's point, what happens between now and February and the few hours of phone calls that we have scheduled, right?
I think if we want to make progress here, folks, we are going to have to do some work outside of this conference room.
We have to set ourselves some time work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I, too, am very optimistic that this is a doable task. I think we can produce some very valuable output here that will go a long way towards addressing some real concerns and some real problems that this community has been struggling with for a long time.
and I'm very proud and very happy to be a part of it. Unless, of course, it all goes south at the last minute.
The good thing is we have a solution for that. If it all goes south, it's Ram's fault.
Jody?
I'd like to echo what Scott was saying, too. Is, you know, I'm a little concerned about being able to get organized on the mailing list and start bantering back and forth. I mean, that's I'm part of the IETF, too, and on one of the working groups, and there's not a whole lot of chatter on that mailing list either, and it's hard to get things to be moved. But, you know, I'm pretty convinced that with this group, since we're all engineers at heart, that, you know, I think engineers can give enough time and money to do anything, right? So we do it. But what my concern is more of whatever we develop, how that's going to be done by the policy and the legal part of ICANN. And I think that that's a pretty huge issue that we are tabling in order to develop the system. That still has to be reviewed. And I have concerns about whatever we develop here is going to be really nitpicked by those two groups. And we may be developing something that will absolutely work. Just like I have a car that will drive 150 miles an hour. That doesn't mean I can drive 150 miles an hour without getting thrown in jail.
Me to Germany.
I haven't, and I have enjoyed it. I have enjoyed
it. Francisco?
But there isn't much to add after what's already been said. I think this meeting in person has been very, very useful. Issues have been put in the open for discussion, and even a few others we have already reached at least an initial you know, sort of design of where things could go, and I feel good about the progress we're making for this person.
Lisa?
I've been working on our GDPR strategy for the last year, and it's the most productive meeting I've been. But I also had a very surface level understanding of a lot of this, and I feel like I got to understand a bit more. Thank you.
Beth, anything to add?
I enjoyed the dinner. I enjoyed the meeting. What other job do you do where you meet somebody from Mexico, England, and like China at the same table? I learned more about Thomas Looney than anybody else. Name me wisdom, history, goodness. I mean, I've enjoyed it.
Where's that?
You want to hear Tomo Fumi singing in Japanese?
Oh, wow. You sing too? See? Look what I just found out.
Kobe karaoke.
All right, thanks, folks. We appreciate all of the feedback.
One sort of half serious closing concern is if we continue to do such an awesome job, is ICANN going to ask us to do more and more stuff?
You can always repeat.
You can always repeat. But, I mean, you're drawn to doing such a good thing. Like, hey, make them do this. Now make them do this.
So, it's kind of a weird thing, Murray, at least my experience. Sometimes, those who do a very good job end up going down in flames. Because it's not about cynicism or anything. There are other factors that apply, not just the operational implementation type of things. And so, you know, there was some who thought that the expert working group from a few years ago did a very good job. But if you go around and talk to folks, some set of folks in the ICANN community, you will not hear, you know, the most positive views of what that group did.
Everyone has an opinion.
Yeah, so it's
phrased differently, but yeah.
our self-appraisal will almost surely be higher than most of the other appraisals.
Fair enough.
Which is why I call them.
Okay, let's close the recording.